You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. My guest this week is Steve Pockross.
There's two reasons to do it. You're growing, and so you have more access and more resources, and then you can actually add to them. And I think at that point, the first thing that I recommend is amplifying what you already do well. So if you have a sales team that's outbound sales, make them more efficient, get them more leads, help close the funnel, get chat reps, things of that nature, work on your messaging. But take something that's an existing asset that's already producing for you and amplify them.
Steve brings more than 20 years of startup, Fortune 500, and nonprofit experience to his role at Verblio. As CEO, he applies leading marketplace and SaaS principles to provide a high-quality, fast, and flexible content creation platform. Steve was part of the early management team at gig economy pioneer LiveOps, growing the company into the largest crowdsourced contact center in the world. At LiveOps, Pockross served as Vice President of Business Development and Strategy and also spearheaded the creation of the award-winning LiveOps Foundation. He also served in marketing, strategy, and operational leadership roles at Tendril, Western Union, Marketing Technologies Group, and HSBC. Steve, welcome to On Brand.
Thanks so much. It's great to be here, Nick.
I am happy to be chatting, and we were sharing some funny stories beforehand of our vast and extremely qualified IT experience in getting everything plugged in and making sure that we had everything set up right. And it is a challenge, on top of everything else that we're going to talk more about with content creation. Now, as I think you noted, if we didn't already have enough on our plate, now we've got even more. How can marketers juggle all of this at what has to be one of the most challenging times to juggle it?
Good heavens, I don't really know how we're all doing it. I often just wake up and see what our team is getting through and talk with all of the clients that I talk with all the time. I don't know how we really get here. So I think the keys are some of the basics of prioritization 101, which is just be good at one thing and then expand from there. And if you figure out the one thing that you're going to be good at, you can give yourself a lot of slack for all the other things. I often think about Rand Fishkin's model for the T-shaped marketer, where there's so many things you have to be that you have to know in order to pull off modern marketing, that if you focus on that one level of the T where you have your expertise, there are partners for everything else to fill in. So don't stress yourself out too much that you have to be great at everything, because it's the more important that you build a team and that you're good at one of those.
Well, I think that's really important advice to repeat and reinforce here, because it seems like with all of these different forms of content that we have, blogging, podcasts, visual content, videos, and now, as everyone continues this audio conversation over on Clubhouse, there's a lot to follow, a lot to keep track of, and I'm kind of reminded of the Ron Swanson quote of instead of half-assing multiple things to whole-ass one thing, and I think it's easy. I mean, I even phrased the question as juggling. It's easy to get caught juggling, doing one thing, focusing, and then expanding. It is hard. So where might one start if they said, okay, that's scary to not do everything? If we wanted to embrace some of that focus, Do we focus on what we're best at? Do we focus on what our audience needs? Where is it best to apply focus?
So I think there's kind of the three bubbles that you're looking for. The perfect Venn diagram are: one is where is your audience? The second is, what do you like to talk about, and what do they like to talk about? And the third is, what's the most fun for you that you're going to keep doing that's going to feel as natural as possible? So I think you look at the three of those things, and wherever you find your comfort zone is going to be a good spot, because you can carve out some area. But I do think the most important thing is, what do you enjoy talking about? So when we started our podcast last year, which is called The Verblio Show, we started thinking about, where's the space in the industry? So everyone else in content creation is very was focused really on kind of more of the tactical level. How many blogs should you write per week? What should your SEO optimization strategy be, et cetera, et cetera? And we really wanted to take a higher ground of, we want to be a bigger marketing partner. We want to be more of a strategic advisor and provide a competitive advantage in content. So how do we get that space? And it just happens to be what I like to talk about all the time, and give me an excuse to talk to great marketing leaders. Those things overlap. And the third is, it's really easy for me. I would so much rather talk than write. There's nothing that scares me more than a blank cursor on a page, which is funny because I run a writing company. I am deeply impressed by writers, but it scares me, and I would much rather go in my comfort zone. So those three things made it easy, and that's why I can keep cranking it out, and it's actually helping the brand and supporting where we want to go with the audience. And, you know, choose one of those things, and I would start with, what's your comfort zone? What do you like to do, and work out from there?
So how do you know from that comfort zone, and once you've found that focus, how do you know when it's time to expand?
It's it's when you have any more when budget or allocation. So it's funny. It's a great question, because it really depends on the growth of your company. There's two reasons to do it. You're growing, and so you have more access and more resources, and then you can actually add to them. And I think at that point, the first thing that I recommend is amplifying what you already do well. So if you have a sales team that's outbound sales, make them more efficient, get them more leads, help close the funnel, get chat reps, things of that nature, work on your messaging. But take something that's an existing asset that's already producing for you and amplify them. We like to think of ourselves verbally that way too, which is, if you have an amazing writer and your SEO is kicking butt, why not use us to get 10 times the amount of content to help you, but still filter it through your amazing writer, so it keeps having the same level of consistency that you're looking for. So I think that's really important, is to amplify. And the second time, so the first place that you would look for moving to other channels is, things are going really well, you're growing, focus on what's doing well and amplify it. The second is, things aren't going well, you need new channels and you have to experiment with something else. And then you need to look for those new sources in order to move through, which is much less of a fun challenge, but one that we've all been through together as well.
Well, I love that that point. It's kind of classic marketing of looking for what's working, amplify, looking for what's not working, and find another thing to do there. And it sounds really basic, but boy, I feel like in the operationalization of all of this, we can kind of get stuck in, these are my chores. I always have them. They will always be there. I will always come. I will always record this many podcasts, this many videos, because that's what we do. It kind of becomes this feeding the beast, as opposed to something that we're actually examining, watching, optimizing, and trying to do better. But it seems like that level of work is getting lost somewhere.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. I think a couple of things I was thinking about as you were saying that, like, I just don't like Twitter. I've never liked Twitter. I've never been on it. Everyone tells me that I should share all of my stuff on Twitter as well, and Facebook, and I don't want to be on Facebook. I don't want to be on Twitter. I like LinkedIn. And so I know I'm supposed to be in all those places. So giving myself a break to just go into my comfort zone. But the first thing you said about marketing being so I got an MBA in marketing at Kellogg. And I was struck in class after class of how obvious everything felt as far as the messages were. Like, my takeaway after every class was, of course you should have done that. But the thing is, when you're actually in marketing, it never occurs to you. And the repeating what is obvious and what are the basics is actually really hard. To focus on the bright spots, focus on the things doing well, moving away from the things that aren't doing well or feel really hard. And then also knowing that this is your job as a marketer. You have to keep looking at these things. You're supposed to find a bunch of things that are broken and don't work. And that's part of the process of being a marketer. It's not, I'm going to find one thing that's going to work forever, because we all know that the new hotness of the day is going to be some new channel. It's going to be the TikTok of the day. And if you get lost in that, you'll never be able to focus on one thing that you do well.
Well, I think that what you talk about, hating Twitter, and I'm the same way. I don't go there as much as I used to. But it's funny because I feel like we need a support group for folks like us, because it feels like a scary thing to admit. Because we're supposed to like everything, we're supposed to do everything, and that just doesn't make as much sense. And honestly, if we get back to, I love that Venn diagram that you mapped out of, you know, where's your audience, what do they like, and what do, I mean, that was the what question, but I think you can, you know, look at that and ask the where question and kind of get a similar Venn diagram. And, you know, you might learn, okay, you don't like Twitter, but your people are there. You might need some other strategy for getting at that. But otherwise, you know, I think that can really kind of be a divining rod almost for you.
Yeah, I think so too. One last pitch as I'm thinking about this is, for anyone who hasn't checked out Rand Fishkins, I'm going to put in a free plug for him, for his new company, SparkToro. It just helps you find where your audience is going and what they're watching, what they're listening to, faster than anything I've ever seen. So this has been kind of one of the missing links, is you spent so many years in time interviewing people to try to figure out what your audience does, where they like, and we finally have like a new tool to figure out where they go. So free pitch for Rand.
That is awesome. Past podcast guests. So we will
good.
Link up to that in our show notes as well.
Hey, On Brand listeners. We talk about a lot of brand building topics here on the show, from developing strong brands to brand stories to building engaged superfans for your brand, both internally and externally. If these are topics that you're working through or struggling with, I'd love to help. I regularly schedule one-time or ongoing brand coaching sessions with clients based on their unique needs. Are you building a new brand? I'd love to help. Struggling with rebranding? I'd love to help. Do you want to create an engaged community around your brand? I'd love to... You get the idea. I've worked with clients of all shapes and sizes, from Fortune 500 companies to small businesses and startups. I've also interviewed hundreds of experts right here on the On Brand podcast and written 2 books. I can apply all of this to the challenges that you're struggling with. To learn more about working personally with me, Nick Westergaard, go to nickwestergaard.com, that's Westergaard with 2 A's, or email me at nick@branddrivendigital.com. Now back to the show.
So we've been talking about how you've built your brand, and we talked a bit in our pre-show about the rebranding that you've gone through over the past few years on the business, and then ahead on the podcast side. So what told you, as we've talked about kind of all of the if this then that with our marketing, what told you that your brand wasn't doing what you wanted it to do?
So I had a really profound learning when I came over. I took over this company from the founding CEO in 2016, so about 4.5 years ago. And one of the first things we did was we went to HubSpot, which is one of the most active places for agencies looking for content and SMBs looking to do content marketing. So this should be like the place that where we are most excited to be in our people. And I found that my interaction, and that was my second week on the job, is there was very little enthusiasm for my brand when I said I was here with the name of the company at the time was BlogMutt. And nobody really knew how we stood out, and nobody really was championing us. Even our clients were not thrilled with us. So, I mean, they were happy to use us, but we were a nice to have. We were a vitamin versus a painkiller versus a true competitive advantage. And so I set back, took a step back and looked at kind of what do we need to do next. Is we have a choice of, do you rebrand right then and basically say this brand is no longer representing what we want it to do? But my choice at the time was really to focus on building the product that we wanted for the audience that we wanted to. And once we had enough pride with it and we felt like we could build a brand on the product and the value prop of the company, then we could really rebrand and represent who we wanted to be. So we spent 2 years deeply focused on quality, building up referenceable clients who were enthusiastic about us. And then we set off to create a new brand of Verblio in October of 2018, which was quite a fun process. And you create, well, you know a lot about brand building, so I'll let you take the conversation from where you went from here.
Well, again, I always think it's fascinating that the earlier question of how you got there, because I think a lot of times we aren't able to make that move because we either feel like, okay, well, I got to do something about that, but it's not bleeding right now. Just leave it alone. But, you know, really being prescriptive and addressing that, especially with the kind of decision tree that you went through on that, I think is really important. And in rolling that out, I mean, what was kind of the timeline on your process? Was it months? Was it years?
We started in December of 2017, and then we had an ambitious goal of launching it within 5 months, and then we ended up launching it in October 2018. So it ended up taking more of like the 11-month schedule, almost a full year, as opposed to the super ambitious, I can't believe it would ever take that long, 6-month period.
Well, and again, you just said it yourself of, I can't believe it would take it that long. And it seems like it always does, I always cringe a little bit when a client or someone asks, how long do you think this will take? And there's a lot of factors that go into that, but I have trouble not making the glib reply that longer than you think is what that answer is, but it takes that time, and that's probably time well spent. That's probably aligning it with other activities. That's probably stepping it out to other things that I'm sure were necessary, that weren't just, oh, this is taking forever. It takes forever because a lot of times you can't speed it up.
It is. So I learned a lot. So this is my first time doing this big of a rebrand. And for those of you who haven't, I'll share some of the things that I learned, which is, I think my false impression was at the beginning, I thought, all right, we need a new name. We're going to get a new name. We need a new logo. We stamp that on everything and we're good to go. And then we met with our brand consultants who were two advisors. One of them had been an old Ultimate Frisbee player friend of mine from teams that we were on back in the late 90s. He is super good at this, has been through a ton of them. And he started out and said, you know, tell me about who you guys are. What are your values? And we just took it from the very top. And it's a representation of who we are, who we want to be aspirationally, and also every aspect of our product. So I think the three areas are, one is what your audience sees before they come to you. So how you're communicating externally. Then two, what's their experience like once they get there, which I hadn't really thought about. I mean, I thought about focusing on product first, but every aspect of the product needs to represent this new brand. And three, what do they talk about you after they've used you, either as an existing client or as a former client? And so we had to think through every layer of that and put that through our product. And the most important thing I think my brand consultant said to me that I didn't understand was, I am giving you an empty vessel. Verblio means nothing right now, and it is your job to infuse it with meaning. And taking that as a call to action and how much more it needed to be was really powerful for me as we thought about every aspect of our business when we were thinking about our brand, starting with our values and moving forward.
You know, those are some great prompts too, in terms of what they see beforehand, the experience, and I love the empty vessel concept. So, as you've launched the brand and grown the brand, how have been, you know, because that seems like I can make a consultant joke because I also am one. But it seems like a consultant-y thing to say of you will infuse it with stuff. And I like the idea of that. What did that come to mean for you? What have you taken that empty vessel and put inside it?
That's a great question. It does sound really consultancy when you play it back when you play it back to me. I try not to talk like that too much. So I'll give you an example. So I always like to start with an example. So we were at HubSpot's Inbound conference, and I'm going to reference the conference again. I think it was at the in September of 2019, and we noticed that about half of our company was at Inbound because it's a giant show for us, and it's all of our target market of digital marketing agencies and SMBs as digital marketers, but that a third of our company was at Burning Man at the exact same time. And we came back and we started to compare and contrast notes about how we both felt like we'd been through total cults and brainwash and all sorts of things, like there's loud music playing all of the time, everybody's talking about everybody's using expressions and cliches that they think mean everything to everybody else. You never have any time. You can't find where the food is. It just keeps going on until we decided that we really needed to create a compare and contrast blog about Inbound versus Burning Man, which is still one of my favorite posts we've ever done. There is absolutely no reason to write that from a business perspective unless that's what you really think is fun and would be interesting. And these are the pieces that get the absolute most, like, in addition to being the most fun, they get the most response from an audience. People are engaging with them. They're different. You're talking to marketers. Like my market is marketers. They want to have fun while they're working at the exact same time. And so what we really did is created a license of, we want to provide quality content and thought leadership. We want to talk a lot about where content strategy is going and all those key things. But a core part of it is it should always be fun. It should have our tone, which should inspire other people who like that to come to our company and as clients and as our employees. And with that license, a certain amount of our content just has to be for the pure joy of it. And that pure joy flows through to the – I hope it flows through to the brand, but it sure makes it much more fun for me to be here.
I love that that idea, that article. And as you were telling the story, I'm like, I bet there were some similarities there. So I think, you know, and it's funny because this is anecdotal, and you being in the, you know, the real science, and we've talked about some great analytics questions on content. But in my experience, again, anecdotally, it's always the pieces like that really take off, and these kind of meat and potatoes, this should be one of our best posts ever, sometimes don't always come out. And why I bring that up is because I think that it's that heart, it's that empty vessel filler that goes a long way, that kind of X factor into who you are, because sometimes that meat and potatoes stuff can be found, especially in the marketing world, you know, a dozen other places, but that special sauce comes from what you've put in that empty vessel that you've infused. So hats off. Good consulting question.
Thank you. I think, and so two of the brands that really inspired me for brand were Drift and Wistia. And because they both followed a similar path, Chris Savage of Wistia talks about how, you know, they're in the most crowded space. There were 10 companies that were doing video hosting. They're all B2B. They should be boring. They created one fun piece of content and it went viral, and it set them off with a, like, on a path that nobody else could follow, even though everybody else had VC funding and could really compete with so many other advantages. And their big advantage was passion, fun, and sharing that, which really inspired me. And he also really built up the concept that we have this unique access to our audience through SEO, through content these days, that you can communicate with an audience if you can find them and keep them in ways that are so much more advantageous than the advertising channels of the past. And Drift does that too. And then the similarities in all three of us is we're all in really crowded spaces that are B2B, that are trying to set ourselves apart with audiences that, you know, could choose from many places. We're trying to have a better product, but you want to work with the people that make you happy to work with them. So it's much more of a competitive advantage than the CFO thinking about, like, how much ROI do I get on every single piece of every click.
Well said. And Steve, you are making me smile because in addition to Rand Fishkin, you've brought up other companies that we've had folks on from, including Wistia and Drift. And I say that you've made me smile because we have reached the point in our show when I get to ask you, what brand has made you smile recently?
Oh, man. I'm going to use the exact same one. It was definitely Wistia. And it was, I can't remember what they said, but there was something that was so clever in one of their emails about, it was a customer service email, and they made it really witty and funny, which is such an unexpected place to be surprised and to smile is when you get like a billing question of like, you know, Chuck from finance is really having a hard time finding your credit card number. And, you know, I hate it when Chuck gets upset with me. So could you really update this? It was probably not that, but it made me feel like that. And I think it's so off the beaten path of where we all think of brand. We all think of like the killer video, the killer, you know, the killer website, as opposed to like that one level of everybody in that company is thinking about brand at all the time, to the point of somebody who's writing copy for customer service billing is thinking about brand.
That is really well said. And I continually love the email inbox. I think as we have all of these different new channels kind of coming full circle to all the different things, I think email is still a great place to surprise and delight, if for no other reason than, as you noted, it's unexpected. Steve, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Great. You can find us at verblio.com, verblio.com. We tried to make the site as fun and engaging as possible, so hopefully you'll enjoy going there anyway. I host a podcast that will, by the time this comes out, be called The Yes and Marketing Show. You can find me there, or you can find me on LinkedIn at Spockross, Spockross.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes at onbrandpodcast.com. Steve, thanks for being on brand with us.
Thanks so much for having me, Nick. It was a pleasure.
And if you like what you're hearing, if we've made you smile, remember to subscribe to the show via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen. And please take a moment and rate and review the podcast to help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.